So you've started raising money for your real estate transactions, then all of a sudden you get a phone call from the local securities commissions. What do you do? Panic? Hide? Ignore them? Or do you seek professional advice? Today we're going to answer all these very important questions. Welcome to the Raising Capital interview series. I'm your host, Russell Westcott from the Real Estate Investment Network, your one-stop shop for all things investment real estate. The intention of this interview series will be to help solve your biggest real estate challenge, and that's where do you find the money to invest? Today, I'm going to introduce you to a top real estate investor and a lawyer who is an expert in dealing with provincial securities commissions. Our special guest is Mr. David Franklin, and he's going to help protect your interests when you're raising capital. David Franklin is an active real estate investor. He has been practicing law for over three decades, and he specializes in securities, mortgages, tax, and real estate, and transacting millions of dollars of properties. David, you're a highly respected lawyer in Toronto and a very busy professional. For you taking time out of your schedule is very appreciated. How are you doing today, David?
Very well. And there's just one change I would say. It's been four decades, not three.
Oh, I'm sorry. My mistake. Four decades.
I had our 40th year graduation class reunion last year.
Wow. That is incredible. Did you ever think when you passed the bar 40 years ago that you would still be a lawyer to this day?
Oh, yes. Yes? I always enjoy practicing.
It's in your law. It's in your blood, is it?
You've got it. It is for doing business is probably one of the best educations you can get, whether it's for real estate, securities, investments, running a company.
Well, I think one of the most important things, too, is you're also a very active real estate investor yourself, are you not?
Yes, I am.
Perfect. So today we're talking about protecting our interests from the local securities commission. So some people have not heard of your name yet, and you will be hearing more of David Franklin in the coming weeks. But for someone who's maybe not familiar with you, David, can you give us a Coles Notes version of who you are, where you've come through, and why we should be listening to you today?
I've been practicing law. I was called to the bar in 73, and I've been involved in securities law, tax, and real estate all those years. That's my passion, all those different areas. And I syndicated a lot of real estate transactions using the public vehicle, which is not by way of prospectus, which is through the securities dealers, but by way of offering memorandum, a private placement, working with accredited investors in Ontario. Other provinces have different definitions, but the worst province, really, from a securities point of view, because of the problems they raise for Ontario, is Ontario in raising capital. It's the hardest one to raise because of the requirements and eligibility requirements for investors.
So you've actually been able to see this from both sides. Both sides, you've seen it from the side of your own personal self raising capital and also from the side of people coming to you for advice. Having a securities, a law, and a tax specialty, you're a highly sought-after professional, aren't you?
Yes, I am. And the key was when we started doing this, and I started doing it back in the 80s, what it was is we wrote our own offering memorandums. Because I'm a lawyer, we sat down with a securities lawyer, and so I was the one that worked and drafted these offering memorandums, so it's firsthand when it comes to this.
So,
and when we did our offering memorandums, we also had to get tax opinions included. Because a lot of the transactions we structured back in that time had tax benefits also attached to them.
So you really learned by really just based upon necessity of what you needed, that's what you became a specialist in.
Exactly.
Oh, so the best way to learn is what you require, become an expert in it.
Exactly. What's happened is in Ontario, the rules and regulations on Ontario Securities Act for raising money kept changing, and they brought in the limited market dealers to sell securities. Before they had that, basically anyone was allowed to do it. So they then restricted it by what they call limited market dealers, which today are called exempt market dealers. And the requirement for Ontario today is that the person that you are going to is either investing a minimum of $150,000 or is an accredited investor. And an accredited investor in Ontario is a person who has a liquid net worth of $1 million, that's excluding his house or mortgages, they don't count, or a net worth of $5 million, or an income over the last 2 years of $200,000, or a husband and wife of $300,000. So it's quite restricted for Ontario. The rules there are different from all the other provinces.
Right. And now that's if you're talking about if you're going out and you're raising money in the public and you're raising funds from people who you don't know, correct?
That is correct. What happens is when you're the whole reason you need an offering memorandum, how the securities law gets involved is how many people are you going out soliciting, if you will, to invest in your project?
Yep.
If you're just going to friends and family and business associates for a small amount, you don't require that because you're not going to the public.
Okay.
So the definition is what really is the public is what you're looking at.
Okay. So you mentioned this thing called offering memorandum. Can you
Yes.
give a little bit more of a, what is it? If someone hasn't heard about it, what exactly is this document?
An offering memorandum is basically the same as a prospectus. So when a company goes public, they have to follow what's called a prospectus. And when you file a prospectus, anyone can invest. There's no restriction on the eligibility for income. And that goes through the securities dealers, you know, RBC, Bank of Nova Scotia, Canaccord. Those are the people that raise the money for the public issues. And that is a prospectus. An offering memorandum is basically the same as a prospectus, by the way. So they both have the same amount of information required.
Okay.
So it's a full-blown securities document.
Full-blown securities. Does that document have to be registered anywhere or filed anywhere, or is it just something that you have to have completed in order to give you backing in case you're contacted by the securities?
Well, the good news is when the prospectus is filed, it must be approved by the Securities Commission where in each jurisdiction that you're raising money. The offering memorandums are not filed before you go to market. They're filed
okay.
after the closing.
Now, how much, I've heard some different numbers on how much it costs to pull one of these together, but I imagine it's not a cheap document to have created.
It depends on your level of expertise and knowledge. Obviously, when I do it, I have the knowledge of what goes in. And the best recommendation is get someone's offering memorandum. There's lots of them around, so you know what goes into them. And if
okay.
you want, you can draft most of the offering memorandum yourself. The information in the offering memorandum is a description of the investment opportunity. It's listing who all the people are that are involved and giving descriptions of them. So if you take someone else's offering memorandum, you'll know exactly what is needed. But you'll also need a lawyer to review it for you as well. And the cost for doing an offering memorandum, I've paid as little as $10,000 because the input I go into have with it, and depending on how complicated it is, and they can run up to $25,000 to $50,000. But
okay.
it's rare that they get to those levels.
Okay. So for many people on this call that are listening to this, you need to go that route for offering memorandum. But there's a good portion of people that are on this call and listening to this that will not be at that point yet. So are you telling us if I just stick with my friends and my family and my close business associates and people who I've networked with and people who I've done business with, I don't have a lot to be worried about from being contacted from the Securities Commission?
That's correct, because if you're dealing with your friends and family, that's who you can go to. There's no restriction for that. It's
okay.
when you go outside that level and you're raising and you're going to a lot of people, that's when you run into these problems.
So what could be some red flag activities that would get me flagged that I'm doing out in the marketplace that I would get that phone call from the Securities Commission?
Normally you'd never get a call from them.
too small a fish and they probably wouldn't call?
That's exactly. The only time you get a call is, remember, you have to follow the rules. You've done an offering memorandum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you have no problem. But if you're going to, you know, 5-10 people, that type of number, small amount, then they look at that and say, are you going to the public? It's a reasonableness test. In other words, how many people are you going to raise money? Because how many really close friends, families, and business associates have you got?
Okay.
You're not talking 100 people. You're talking a small number. So it's a reasonableness test. How many people are you going to raise money?
Okay, perfect. So let's imagine that I haven't got an offering memorandum, and I've been out marketing, and maybe I put an ad in a paper or something, which I probably shouldn't have done, and Ontario Securities Commission saw it, and they've contacted me. What teeth do they have, and what can they do? Paint me worst-case scenario, David.
What they can do, they just restrict you from selling the issue. That's basically all they do. Because what's happening is you're breaching the law, the securities law, which is not a criminal offense, by the way. And so it's a regulatory offense, and they what they do is they penalize you by not allowing you to to go to the public to raise money. And they
for
can
that
charge
particular
you,
deal?
For deals in the future as well, for several
okay.
years.
Okay, can they go back and take a look at open my books up to maybe I've done three or four different joint ventures or something in the past. Can they turn it upside down, can they?
Well, they're not looking for that. Where the problems come up is when you're out doing, in other words, you're way out in the public domain. So if you're going to friends, family, you're not going to a lot of people, there's no interest from their point of view to get involved with you.
Okay.
So it's not really an issue that you're talking about that's scary.
Okay.
It's only, so in other words, if you're running ads, okay, if you're getting people to invest in real estate that you're working on, that, and so what's happening there, you're going to the public. You are going to the public, but what is happening? Now, the reason prospectuses and offering memorandums are issued, by the way, is not to protect the investor, contrary to what is said. The reason offering memorandums and prospectuses are done is to protect the issuer, not to protect the investor. The reason is, if you take a look at an offering memorandum and prospectuses, they have the risk factors in there. And one of the risk factors could be that you could lose all your money.
Yep.
Okay? Now, that's, so in other words, who's that protecting? So what happens then is, then they have what's called rescission rights. If you learn of a misrepresentation in the offering memorandum or prospectus, then there's a time limit when you have the right as the investor to rescind. And that can be up to 6 months after, and that's it. So what happens is the whole reason you do an offering memorandum is to protect yourself as an issuer. That is the reason you do it.
Okay.
Not to take on the liability. It's not to protect the public.
So it really is almost a necessary tool for a real estate investor to have.
What happens is, when you're doing it, the risk is if you go out and you're raising money without an offering memorandum, then what happens is, and you do close, then you're responsible for any misrepresentations. You haven't got the protection of the Securities Act limiting your liability. So that's really the big difference, that you're okay. now responsible for all the representations you made.
Can that be covered in a, well, maybe I'll ask this first question first, is what's the difference between, say, a joint venture agreement and an offering memorandum?
Well, a joint venture agreement is only a couple of people getting together. You're making
right.
representations, so you've got complete liability. Now, you could put in the agreement that you're not responsible for any of the representations, but I think you'd have a hard time doing that. Because
right.
in the joint venture agreement, you're setting out that you are providing the information and you're representing. And so when you have a joint venture agreement, it represents and sets out all the things that are going to happen and what you're going to be doing.
Yep. So a good analogy would be a joint venture agreement is good for one or two people you're working with that you're in a financial partnership. An offering memorandum would be good if better applied if you're working with a group of people maybe that are unrelated to each other.
That's correct, and that's what happens. So when you do it, and what you can do as well is you can start off with what we call a term sheet.
Mm-hmm.
So you can write up what the terms of your deal are, send that out to people to get expressions of interest to find out if your deal is of interest to people. So you're not selling people, you're going out finding if people are interested based on a term sheet.
Okay, so if I get your process flow here, so a term sheet would almost be like a little bit of a marketing document of I have this property that I am in looking to invest. I need $150,000. Here's the location. Here's some of the fundamentals and some of the details. Are you interested?
That's right. And we're talking about offering memorandum. You're talking about raising over $1 million. You're not talking small money. So if you're looking for small money, you're not looking really at the public markets. You're just dealing with friends and family.
Okay.
And so when you need an offering memorandum, you're talking, you know, $1 million plus. That's what you're looking at.
Right.
And one of the biggest misconceptions people have, and I've heard this, is that, you know, you have to go bring in an EMD, an eligible market dealer. And exempt market dealer. And that is not true whatsoever. And in Ontario especially, what happens is you've got exempt market dealers who are trying to market and charge fees. And what happens is the issuer, in other words, the person who's raising the money is doing it. So if you have a company that's raising the money, the officers and directors of the company, they can go out and solicit and bring in investors. There's no problem whatsoever. And that's done in each of the provinces. So in no province do you need an exempt market dealer. You can do it yourself. And the only restrictions are about payment of fees to people working in the company.
Right.
That's all that happens. So in Ontario, okay, you cannot pay any fees in addition to the people working to raise the capital. That's all that happens.
Okay. So,
and then the next part is that with the exempt market dealer, what I find in Ontario is if you're looking for someone to raise money as an exempt market dealer, go look at their track record to see if they've raised money from, especially Ontario, accredited investors, or in Alberta from eligible investors. So you want to see their track record because you may find that you are much better at doing it yourself than going out and hiring someone. So you need to look at their track record to see if they can actually raise the money for you.
Wow. Very good.
And a lot of exempt market dealers will go and charge fees because they want to say, look, we've got to do due diligence. We've got to check your deal up before we start.
Right.
The thing is, before you get involved with them, you want to find out for them, are they actually capable of raising money for you?
Hmm.
As I said, like in Ontario, it's very difficult. The exempt market dealers, they can only deal with accredited investors, basically.
Right.
Now, so if you're working in Ontario, you've got to find out, have they been able to raise that money? If not, then you can go do it yourself. You do not need a dealer, and that applies in all the provinces.
Well, sage advice. So really, I also jotted something down here, so make sure you have a pen and paper, everyone, about really a cut line for, you know, a joint venture and single family and smaller properties versus offering memorandums, about $1 million in the capital raised, because, you know, if you're paying $10,000 to $50,000 to get offering memorandum created and you're only raising, you know, $100,000, it doesn't make much sense with that as well. So there's this term out there that people may or may not be aware of called investor exemptions. Why should a real estate investor be aware of these? And what are they, first of all?
Well, let me just tell you what the rules are for BC.
Okay.
Because there's a lot of members in BC. What happens there, to be exempt, you must fill out an offering memorandum in the form that is specified by the BC Securities Commission. They have a form, and you fill it out, and it's online with the BC Securities Commission.
Okay.
And the investor should be signing a risk acknowledgement form also provided by the province. And the officers and directors can be paid a reasonable fee for obtaining investors. So BC is the friendliest place in raising funds. And what's happening is the investor is signing the risk acknowledgement form.
Okay.
And then after closing, you file a form with the BC Securities Commission listing all the investors, their names, addresses, etc., and you file your offering memorandum. For Alberta, issuers can go to anyone for amounts under $10,000, provided the investor signs a risk acknowledgement form. And what happens, Alberta has its own form for an offering memorandum, which is different than the BC form, so you must fill it out. And in Alberta, you have what's called an eligible investor, not an accredited investor.
Okay.
An eligible investor is a person who has assets of $400,000, a net income before taxes of over $75,000 in the two most recent calendar years, or net income before taxes alone with a spouse, which exceeds, together, $125,000. So it's not that large an amount.
Okay.
Now, in Alberta, if the office's directors are selling, these people cannot earn more than 20% of their income from selling securities on behalf of their company. Now, for the rest of the country, let's just give you the rules. BC rules apply in New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, Newfoundland, and Labrador.
Okay.
So those are the rules.
So we got those rules cover both coasts.
That's right. Now, the Alberta rule is for Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Quebec, and Prince Edward Island. So in all these jurisdictions, except for Ontario, so the BC people and the rules, they can go raise as much money as they want and pay fees to the people working for the issuer. That's the key, the office of directors of the company.
Right.
In Alberta, the province that matched theirs, then no more than 20% of the income of that person can be earned from doing this. So it makes it very easy for raising money, and the forms are online from the province that have to be filled out, and it's the form that that the province sets. So it's just complete the blanks, if you will,
okay.
Provide the information.
So that risk acknowledgement form sounds like an important document that people should have.
It's online, not a problem.
I think that's even, you know, as you were writing that down, that might be something even people should have a document of that nature signed, even if they're doing just a simple joint venture, is really a risk acknowledgement form by your investors.
The only problem I'd have with that, in a sense, is that if you're dealing with a joint venture partner,
mm-hmm.
he's relying upon you.
Right.
So if you're saying, come into my deal, and notwithstanding, I've told you all these great stories, right?
Yep.
What happens is that if you're saying, I'm not going to be liable, why would I invest with you?
Okay, very fair point. Well, that's one of the beautiful things about doing the small partnership is you're in it together, really.
That's right.
If something goes off the rail, I'm on the hook as much as you're on the hook, Mr. Investor. And in some cases, I'm on the hook a little bit more.
That's
really
correct.
Especially if I'm signing my name to the mortgage and they're putting their investment capital, I'm 100% liable for the note that's attached to that property, where all you have is just your investment capital in the deal.
That's right.
So.
And so the difference really is, when you're, and as you said, when you're dealing with a joint venture partner, joint venturer or partner, you're working together, so all they're relying upon your representation warranties. You're liable for it because that's what you're telling people.
Yep, and quite frankly, you should be held accountable for
completely.
Your representation, because you have an ownership stake in the property.
That's right.
Good. Brilliant. Now, it's one of, talking with you, you deal with a, by just you, when you hear this in what your stories that you tell, you deal with a completely different level of investor, people, you know, with elite wealth and higher net worth individuals where you're dealing in securities of that. One of the beautiful things about having you at the upcoming Raising Capital event is that you're going to be able to share your wisdom of how to raise the big capital. Do you have some examples of some deals and how they're structured from a larger deal perspective that have come across your desk recently?
Well, I'll tell you one that's come across. It's for funding construction of condominiums in Toronto.
Okay.
And the structure that is being put in place, and lots of money is being raised on this, is that the investors put up 80% of the money, and the developer puts up 20% of the money. And the profits are split 50-50.
Okay, and so that's a of the down payment, if we would call it, like the down payment money, right?
It's the cash to buy the land.
Yeah, the cash, yep. Okay.
So in other words, if the land is $10 million, the investors put up $8 million, and the developer puts up $2 million. So he's got his money in there as well.
Okay.
And the profits are split 50-50.
Okay.
And the developer then is required to provide all the financing for the construction of the project, which is, you know, we're talking very big amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his responsibility, not the liability of the investors.
Okay.
And the investors, what happens is they take title with the developer of the land, and they postpone, or they allow, the registration of the mortgage from the bank for construction.
Okay.
So here's a deal where it's 80% from the funding from the investor, 20% from the developer, and a split of 50-50 for profit.
Yep. And then the developer takes the financing in their name.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, does the developer take any fees or anything up front from, like, a development fee or anything of that nature? Do they take any fees?
No, none whatsoever.
Okay.
And so what will happen is the only additional monies on closing are the closing costs for the purchase, land transfer, legals, and all that.
Okay.
So that's and obviously these are all done by way of offering memorandum.
Right. Now, for those investor partners that are putting up the 80% of the money, what kind of terms would they be expecting? What kind of ROIs? What kind of would they be expecting interest on their money? Would they be expecting just the upside potential down the road? What are their expectations, and how do they make their money?
In this deal, what happens is the investors are only participating in the upside on the deal. No return on funding. And so now that's why you'd want an offering memorandum, because one of the things that you put in there as the issuer is that you could lose all your money. Now, take a look at the risk. What happens if the market changes?
Right.
Well, the good thing is the land's being paid for in cash. So all that you have to have ongoing is basically property taxes.
So the operating expenses on the raw land is quite low.
That's no. It's in the city of Toronto, so you're not talking low money. You're
right.
Talking property taxes are quite high.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. This is Toronto we're talking about.
Right.
But that's your only expense now. Once the project is ready and rezoned, then they have to go spend the money for marketing of the project, which is a couple $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And what will happen is the developer will go to his bank and raise the money by way of a first mortgage on the property.
Okay.
But then it's his responsibility later to pay it off.
Right.
Not the investors.
Okay. So really the investors are just putting up the money to buy the land.
That's right.
The developer is putting up some money to close the land, and then they're getting mortgage financing to develop all the condos, which eventually they're going to turn into a saleable product and then sell it on to the end consumer.
That's correct. And so the developer is taking the lion's share of the risk.
Right.
So this is not a deal where you're going to a guy and saying, put up 100% of the money and we'll split the profits 50-50.
Right.
This is a deal where you got, and these are major players, these developers.
Right.
And several $100 million has been raised on this as well.
Okay.
So we're talking big monies, very sophisticated investors.
Yeah, and lots of complications and lots of the main thing that you really have to have in this would have a lot of clarity and transparency to what's going on.
Well, it's all being done through an offering memorandum.
Yep, and that's what an offering memorandum does, doesn't it?
Exactly. And remember, the people that are doing the issue, they want to be protected, because if anything goes wrong, they don't want to be sued.
Ah, yes.
That's why they're using the offering memorandum, because it's a security, raising the funds, and this way, in case something goes wrong, there's no liability for them.
Okay. Makes perfect sense. And that's why we love having you on board here, David, is because you have these kinds of stories of these. And I bet if you went through the archives of the 40 years of you've done transactions, you could probably pull out a few war stories, couldn't you?
Oh, yes. And I think the key to what we're saying is when you're dealing with more sophisticated investors, what happens is they won't deal with you basically unless you've got some money in the deal. That's what a very sophisticated investor says. Very nice. What are you putting in?
Right.
So the other part is when you're raising money, you have to have a track record. If you want to get someone to put up all the money without you putting up any amounts of money, you have to have a strong track record. And what you should be doing then is keeping track of all the deals you've done. So this way you can show that you know your purchase price, when you did it, what happened. This way you can sit down with people and show them that you have all the deals you've done so they can check it out themselves.
Yep. And in order to build a track record, sometimes you have to start really small. And then, you know, I bet that developer that you're talking about that's, you know, $100 million properties, I bet they started small with probably purchasing one property in the 80s and renovating it and flipping it or something back then.
Well, these are big companies.
Yeah.
These are fair-sized companies that are doing it.
All companies probably started fairly small, humble beginnings usually. So.
Well, the guys we're talking about, these are companies that have worth in the hundreds of millions and billions of dollars.
Okay.
These are not small people.
First transaction you did, your first real estate property.
Yeah.
Would you still own that, or do you...
We sold them off.
A lot of those off. What's your investment? What's your personal investment focus right now?
What we're looking at basically today is the United States. I look at the United States because I'm risk-averse, and so what I find is there's more risk in Canada than there is in the States. The reason being... we're looking at prices that keep going up and affordability. And if something happens here with interest rates, we can see property prices decline. Because basically, on investment properties, everything depends on what the income is, the underlying income. In the States, what we find is the prices are very depressed and the rental market for residential is very strong. So you've got much less downside risk, I find, in the United States than you do here.
Right.
Because prices are so low and... the rule of thumb in Canada is you're looking at a property here for residential, you're looking at a property if it's got of 8 to 10% of the purchase price is what the rent is.
Yep.
So on a $100,000 property, you're looking at $8,000 to $10,000 is rental income, the gross.
Yep.
In the States, on a $100,000 property, you're looking at a minimum of $12,000 a year. They call it the 1% rule in the States.
Yep.
So whatever you pay, you should be at least 1% of that price as your rental income.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, your prices are low. And what I found was for Ontario and Quebec, buying Toronto and Vancouver, what your down payment is on investment is the whole purchase price in the States.
Yep, I agree. And as always, local markets, there's different subsets within local markets. There are fantastic opportunities in Canada and different markets in the country, as there is in the States. In different markets, there's good and there's bad. You just have to have a geographic specialty in that. So.
You hit the nail on the head. You got to pick the area you go into and then become the expert in that area. Exactly.
Absolutely.
Correct.
Wow. Some incredible stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really looking forward to your presentation at the upcoming Raising Capital event, June the 16th. You're going to be walking us. The beautiful thing about having you there is and I imagine if we bought you a glass of scotch at the social after, you'll probably really spill the beans about everything, wouldn't you?
Most certainly.
You're going to be there. Are you able to answer questions? You're going to be on one of the panels at the end of the day for advanced raising money, what we talked about now. As well, you're also going to dive into a little bit more detail on the protecting yourself and the securities commissions and the forms to do and all the regulations is all going to be in the handout that we'll be getting at that workshop. So can you give why should somebody attend this event, do you think, David?
For people that want to raise money from the public, if you're thinking and you want to get into the market in a larger way than just raising money in small amounts, joint venturers, you have a bigger vision, you need the background, the education, and this is the start for doing this and how to get involved. And also you need the confidence, that's the other part, as well as a track record, in going out and being able to present. Confidence is a major part of this, and learning how to present with confidence is key to all of this.
Nothing better than being surrounded by a room full of people that are doing it, and that'll give you confidence in and of itself. So,
yes.
Excellent, incredible stuff. What's the best place that somebody, if they're interested in maybe talking further or getting some more information, or even maybe, I don't know if you're taking clients on or anything, but how can somebody get a hold of you? What's the best place to get a hold of you?
I think the best way of doing it is working through your offices.
Through the RAIN office?
Absolutely. Yes, it is.
So if you are interested in getting hold of David Franklin, we can, if you just funnel a question to the info@raincanada.com and just put David Franklin in the subject line, and we will get that contact information to you and some questions. And I also know that you're going to be helping out with answering questions on U.S. properties and securities and all different things on our community discussion forum as well, aren't you?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. So another expert person on the forum in the community will, to help answer your questions. So that's fantastic. So David will be one of our experts at the upcoming Raising Capital event in Ontario on June the 16th. So make sure you come out with your questions, or if you got a scenario of a big deal, I'm pretty sure that David has seen many deals like that. It's happening on June the 16th. It's at the International Center. It's out by the Pearson International Airport. And this event is designed to solve the biggest challenge that you will have. And the biggest challenge people have when we're talking to them is they don't have enough money to invest in real estate. That's what this event is dedicated to solve. So if you are interested in registering, you can call our office at 888-824-7346, or you can follow the registration link on this page where you're listening to this wonderful interview. David, thank you for your time today. Do you have any final closing messages you'd like to leave for the listeners?
I think that people that are getting educated and learning more about real estate as they get more advanced in the real estate market and spend more time in that area and build their expertise and knowledge and want to really develop to the next level, this is the next level.
Fantastic. I couldn't agree with you more. On behalf of all our listeners, on behalf of all the RAIN partners and everyone else who is participating in this Raising Capital interview series, I wanted to thank you for your time today, David.
You're welcome.
And this is Russell Westcott from the Real Estate Investment Network, your one-stop shop for all things investment real estate, signing off and looking forward to seeing you very soon at an event coming up. Bye for now.